has survived a vote of no confidence just 2 days after Hamza Yousaf announced he would step down as First Minister. BBC News.
Read by Charles Carroll.
It's one of Hollywood's greatest films, starring two of Tinseltown's biggest names.
But talking about it can be a bit of a problem.
The work is so universally agreed to be truly great. And the crime, as you say, is just awful.
I'm Eleni Jones.
And I'm Mark Kermode.
And we're taking a deep dive into Chinatown.
But how do we approach the film in light of what we know about its director?
I can look at a film and just watch the film as a film, not the history of anything that went on before.
Exploring the genesis, production and controversy of an iconic movie. Screenshot continues on Radio 4 and BBC Sounds.
On Friday evening at 7:15.
Is there anything wrong with delaying the responsibilities of adulthood? At 8 o'clock here on Radio 4, Antisocial asks if young people are refusing to grow up or just enjoying harmless escapism. Now, another guest enters Room 101 to suggest why their pet peeves and worst nightmares should be banished forever.
Supposing you had the chance to get rid of some of your worst nightmares, what would they be? My guest is here to persuade me to banish the items on her list to a place where they'll never be seen again. This is Room 101. Ladies and gentlemen, will you please welcome journalist, broadcaster, champion poker player and host of Only Connect, Victoria Cohen Mitchell! Well, the audience are on your side before we even start. Let me ask you first of all, would you describe yourself as someone who's easily irritated?
I'm constantly irritated. I'm never anything else. I live in a state of constant irritation. The thing about sending in a list of things you find irritating,
yes,
for a show like this is the second you've pressed send, 1,000 other things come into your mind. I've been furious all day.
Okay, your first choice is illustrated by this sound effect. So what does that represent?
That represents shops that don't take cash.
So tell me about shops that don't take cash.
I'm not a fan of the cashless society in general. Mm-hmm. I'm psychologically at all times sitting on the porch with a kind of keg of whiskey and oil buried underneath it holding a gun. I'm that tight.
Yes. I can tell that by looking at you.
It's like there's something cool and trendy about it. Oh, we don't take cash. No, we're completely paperless.
Yes.
If they had a sign saying, well, we've opted into traceable global capitalism.
And do you want fries with that?
But I'd respect them for that.
Yes.
But it's the sympathy for cash. Cash, you old woman. As yes. If that's what the cool people are doing, are just tapping. Why should the government know if I'm buying a sex toy? This is my... Or a coffee.
Yeah.
You know, not necessarily in that order.
No.
But why is that any business of Jeremy Hunt?
Yes. Suppressing a remark in my head. It's a recent survey in The Sun suggested that 80% of shops in London were refusing to take cash. It can't be as high as 80%.
It feels like it
does
is. It feels like it is. I mean, I don't know if it's cheating to extend this to parking.
Mm.
So to try... Listen, That is the sigh of someone who is just trying to have an affair, and when you have to put your number plate, what hours you were there, and then it's got to be written on your bank statement.
Yeah, so you're right. Parking's another area that's affected by cashless payments. In some parts of London, it is now impossible to park without a smartphone, or indeed without a car. So...
But it genuinely is dangerous to say, let's set the stage for everything I do to be recorded.
Mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm.
Something like cash is a ticket to freedom.
Yes.
It's better than a passport. You can take it and run. I haven't committed a lot of crimes.
No. Any that you wish to share with us?
I think no. Everybody has the right to do something really stupid without anyone knowing.
Yes.
And the idea that it needs to be
That's
traced...
what BBC Three is for.
That's an incredibly clever joke.
Yeah, thank you so much. Is there an argument, though, that because there's so much information being gathered on everybody, that there's too much information for it to actually be relevant for them to decide what, to figure out what you're doing? Because there's millions upon millions of transactions every day.
That's true, and I would think you were right if it wasn't for the fact that when you and I get home, we're both going to get lots of emails advertising easy ways to get BBC Three on your phone.
Pickpockets have now got a sneaky contactless way to sort of... There's contactless card readers, so these thieves sidle up to you and tap the machine against your trousers or wherever you keep your, you know, and they take a payment off you without you realising. Hence the phrase, is that an illicit payment of £12.50 or are you just pleased to see me? But the banks have now brought out a special card which you put in your wallet which blocks the signal, so there's a kind of financial war going on within your pockets.
Well, there's always a financial war going on within my pockets. But don't you find the very concept of a pickpocket suddenly seems romantic and old-fashioned?
Yes.
there's something...
Could you describe the pickpocket man? Yes, he had dark flashing eyes and a winsome smile. There's a misunderstanding that a shop can't refuse cash because it's legal tender, but apparently that's wrong. According to the Bank of England, legal tender means that if you are in debt to someone and you offer cash to settle the debt, they can't refuse it. But apparently, if you're in it, this is, I don't know if this is an urban myth or not, if you're in a sandwich shop and they don't take cash, take a bite out of the sandwich. Have you heard this one?
Yeah, I wouldn't advise doing that in Pret. I've tried their sandwiches.
Yeah.
But in general, if you...
Other inedible sandwiches are also available.
But in theory, you're right, aren't you? If you steal the sandwich, you're in debt.
Yes,
and
yes.
They'd only have invited you to do that with their cashless ways.
Yes, yes. I don't know how it works in a clothes shop. You could quickly wear out a pair of trousers. So, do you know, which country do you think has made it a criminal offence to refuse cash?
America?
No. Much closer to home. A country known for its fierce independence of spirit.
Is it Scotland?
No, France.
Oh.
France. It is illegal in France. You can actually be fined for refusing cash. Yeah.
I mean, a round of applause for the French.
Yes.
On a Radio 4 show, I never thought I'd see the day.
Can I put this into Room 101? Yes. Yes, I can. In it goes. Excellent. So, Victoria, tell us about your next choice.
It's people who are early.
Which you consider to be very rude and inconsiderate. Now, you may be on thinner ice here with the... But tell us, about what is it about people who are early? Why don't you like that?
Because everyone complains about people being late.
Yes.
And the ones who are early get away with it. I find it... It's so passive-aggressive.
Yes.
Oh, not ready, is it, they say, arriving at the door 20 yes. minutes early when you're naturally sort of in a nighty picking the chicken up off the floor and cleaning it with a tea towel.
Yeah.
The sense of sort of competence. I don't like someone who's together enough to be early.
Yes.
It's not good to be very late. The correct thing to be is about 7 or 8 minutes late at all times.
Yes.
I once had a chap that I was seeing arrive for a date 24 hours early.
So that's a calendar mishap, isn't it?
No. Now I think back, it sounds so glamorous, it can't have been me, but he was a diplomat.
Yes.
And he lived in Washington and he was flying over to see me. And the day before I was coming, I had it all planned. I was going to get my hair done. Mm-hmm. I was going to have every hair completely removed, head to foot, like one of those weird bald dogs. Completely hairless, spray tan.
Well, what do you mean? You had to have every hair removed?
Yes, my hair.
You're referring to your hands here, because it's
everywhere.
Radio.
Everywhere.
Everywhere?
Everywhere. You
can't include parts of Shropshire.
I mean... You can't imagine where... Anyway,
well, I am imagining it, but... I'll try not to.
But, you know, spray tan,
yeah, yeah.
Choose the clip. It was all going to be done 24 hours early.
Right.
When I'm there, you know, in my flat, smoking, just pens in my hair, you know, sort of eating something. Like the doorbell rang and he shouted through the intercom, "Surprise!" So early and a surprise.
Yes.
A combination which is genuinely worse than nuclear weapons.
Yes.
And if for some reason... He thought that was nice to be... I had to just send him back to America.
I mean, I would have thought one of the chief sort of qualities of a diplomat was tact.
You would think that. He didn't understand it because people who were early, I'm afraid, and I'm sorry if that includes anyone in the audience, there's a smugness to it. Look, I'm early. You weren't ready, were you? They're satisfied with it. There's something judgmental about being early.
So you're saying that sort of being late is preferable, around 7-8 minutes late. Is there an acceptable time on for early, like 5 minutes early?
No.
No?
No. I think on time is quite rude. You've got to give the other person a chance to be a bit scatty, to have messed up.
Yes.
But they wait, they lurk like spiders in a corner.
Now, this is something that when I was growing up, I don't think I ever heard this phrase, because, I mean, nobody ever came round our house, apart from the people who lived there. But this phrase, 8 for 8:30.
Yes.
Now what exactly... So, OK, you invite me to your house, not that you ever have. I mean, you could install a waiting room, but I suppose that's not occurred to you. So if you said to me, come to our house 8 for 8:30, what exactly does that... Does it mean 8? Does it mean 8:30? Does it mean 8:15?
8:37 is what it means.
8:37.
No, to me it would.
Yes.
To most people when they say 8 for 8:30,
yeah,
they mean... If you come after 8:30, dinner will be burnt. If you
yes.
come before 8 o'clock, I'll be naked. So...
But I won't expect a barbecue then.
It means sort of 25 past 8. But if they're saying 8 for 8:30, it means you've been to their house before and they don't trust you.
Right.
At some point, you've been early or late and they haven't liked it, so they've had to give parameters. I find when we moved house,
yes.
we put in a doorbell that you can switch off. There's a button in the cupboard,
yeah.
and you click it off, and if people that arrive early and they press and press,
yeah.
and then the time comes you've actually invited them for, and they press and press, and 7 minutes after the time I've invited them for, I switch on the doorbell.
Have you always been like this?
Do you know, I'm really worried that I haven't. I've become like this.
I don't know if I can put this in, you know.
Please do come to our house, by the way, Paul.
Yeah, I will. Yeah, and I'll get there early as well, just to be annoying.
No.
Well, you've convinced me with your passion, so in it goes to room 101. Okay, so your next choice, Victoria, is an aspect of modern life which is beginning to affect everyone. It's WhatsApp. So, invented because it was thought it was more communication would make the world better. Does it?
Who thought, I'm just not getting enough messages? A few years ago when you could just go on holiday and you come back to a couple of things on the answering machine. Now, endless emails, texts, and people thought, I tell you what I need, another way for people to get in touch. And this time in huge clods of people.
Yes.
Everyone on the street is on the WhatsApp. All the parents at the school are on the WhatsApp. I had to join WhatsApp because the other parents at my daughter's school are on it. But I don't completely understand the etiquette of it. I mean, I had children quite old, like, you know, like Sarah in the Bible. The elderly, just I barely got a phone. But I think there's something they all understand about WhatsApp that mm-hmm. I don't.
Yes.
So, for example, somebody will put on there, we're thinking of going roller skating on Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
And 35 parents, well, you're brilliant, roller skating. Have you tried roller skating in this? But this is the roller skating all day. And you're bleeps and thing, and you're looking, and what if it's all day? And then I will put something about the school, like, has anyone noticed that next term, sports day, is the first day of term? Is that odd? And nobody replies. There's this silence, and it's like they can't look at me. Oh, doesn't she realise what? What? Anything that seems to be a useful question,
because yes.
we could all discuss it, nobody discusses. But as soon as it's something like, I thought your costume was good for World Book Day, 84 people, I also thought your costume was good for World Book Day, ding, 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 all day.
Does somebody say I thought your costume spoke volumes? This is what WhatsApp says on its own website about the benefits of WhatsApp. With private messaging and calling, you can be yourself. Speak freely and feel close to the most important people in your life, no matter where they are. Essentially, it's trying to replicate talking to somebody in real life who's next to you.
Well, there's, funnily enough, there's a WhatsApp group for our neighbourhood where we live.
Yeah.
And somebody... put on the WhatsApp group, I saw a cat run out from under the Mitchell's hedge. I thought it was going to get run over. Is it their cat? And I thought, OK, you've got my number. I'll tell you what you could do. You could ring me up and say, I saw a cat under your hedge. Is it your cat? I mean, or don't. Or
yes.
just get on with your life.
Yeah, yeah.
it has to be asked in the third person with me as a witness.
Yes.
Of 100 people in the area. And I have to sort of sidle in and go, I think it's not their cat. I think they haven't got a cat. And you can see how people that have used a lot of WhatsApp, because they send messages one sentence at a time, you know, like a stream of consciousness. Do you want to have dinner? Send. We could go Thursday. Send. What about 8 o'clock? Send. And you have beep, 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 like those the heart monitors in a soap opera, you know?
Yes.
It sounds like an emergency. You know what? I better look. And it's always 18 messages.
Yes.
And everybody replies. Unless it's a question for me, a perfectly sensible question about the school policy you'd think they'd want to discuss, and nobody replies.
I was talking about here, they were saying that it allows people to speak freely and be themselves. Here is Boris Johnson, one of his WhatsApps, that says, Matt Hancock is f***ing useless. I can't think of anything other than taking him off and putting Gove on. To which Dominic Cummings replied, the whole cabinet is so totally shit, I'm afraid this would make it worse, not better. So we wouldn't have that exchange if it wasn't for WhatsApp.
No, I think you might be winning me over there.
A journalist recently wrote in The Guardian, she said, if I were a woman of courage, I would simply exit these chats as soon as I added to them, but I feel the weight of social obligation and so I remain. I'm not the only person to feel this way. Last month, WhatsApp bowed to public pressure and announced that users will be able to exit groups invisibly without notifying other members of their decision. So leaving a WhatsApp group is like escaping from a cult.
I don't entirely understand the difference between WhatsApp and podcasts.
Yes.
But a podcast is another thing. I don't think I know anybody that doesn't have a podcast. It seems to be just another way of wittering on. I've got more to say, more to type, more to put up there. And yes. They're just the beauty of silence.
Yes. Well, I should actually say that this is a radio programme, but it does turn into a podcast, apparently.
You see, if
I don't know how it happens. I think there's a magic ceremony in the woods at midnight.
You're a better man than I am if you even understand what that means.
Am I going to put this into room 101? Do you know what? See, when I first started doing this programme, which was around the turn of the last century, nobody ever talked about social media. They didn't talk about the internet. They didn't talk about WhatsApp groups because most of it didn't exist. But it seems to me that virtually everybody I'm talking to now about Room 101, one of these subjects will come up. It seems to be an absolute blight on humanity. So I can't see how I can possibly keep it out of Room 101. In go WhatsApp groups. Definitely. Now, Victoria, your next choice is a rather unusual one. It's actors who are also pilots.
Yes. It's incredibly annoying. And there aren't many of them. Yes, I mean, there's a particular three.
Who are the three that you were thinking of?
Well, so there's obviously John Travolta and Tom Cruise.
Yes.
And then also Harrison Ford.
Yes.
Now, Harrison Ford is not so big on putting on the uniform and the hat and everything.
Yeah.
But he's a much worse pilot. Harrison Ford is regularly crashing the planes anyway.
Well, no, you're right about that. Harrison Ford recently crash-landed onto a golf course, which is probably the most single exciting thing that ever happened on a golf course. He escaped with minor injuries. This is one of the occasions where he was flying a World War II plane.
I mean.
But his son felt the need to tell ABC News, my father is every bit the man you would think he is. E.g. a bad pilot.
Look, I don't like aeroplanes anyway.
Yeah.
My fear of flying counsellor died in a plane crash. And that sounds like a joke, but it actually happened. But genuinely, we did that. I know, it's awful, isn't it? And I was quite frightened of flying before, and I really am now. Mm. So the concept of flying a plane for fun seems awful. I think the problem is they're ashamed of being actors. They think there's something sort of namby-pamby about being an actor, and they want to say, look at me, I'm also a pilot. There are poets that are the same. Have you read much Virgil?
He was one of my favourite Thunderbird pilots.
So he writes these things, Georgics, right, Virgil, which is all about little agriculture and it's sort of violent and it's like he's trying to say, don't go thinking I'm just a poet, I'm a macho, Milton's the same,
yeah.
You know, I'm plucking berries with forced, rude fingers. It's because he's ashamed of being a poet.
Paul Newman,
Yes.
Very macho man. Made his own salad dressing.
Lovely. See, it's more about that.
Yes.
It's fine to be an actor. It's fine to put on tights and makeup and sing a song in front of people. Mm-hmm. Well done.
Yes.
You don't have to fly a plane to prove that you've got this macho streak. The salad dressing is great.
John Travolta, in fact, has got his first pilot license when he was 22. He has 5 aeroplanes. So when he wakes up in the morning and looks at his Piper Cherokee, which I'm informed is a plane, and he says, "You're the one that I want," and he goes into that and flies off. I've never been able to do puns. I have to say them quickly. With the exception of Angelina Jolie, actresses don't fly. She does, apparently. She's got a pilot license. Why do you think that is? Do you think it is comes down to just being a macho thing, men showing off, men dressing up?
I mean, I appreciate I've only been able to name 3 people.
Yeah.
So I'm not saying it's a terrible epidemic.
No.
It's quite niche. Doesn't it seem they're constantly having awards ceremonies?
Yes.
Congratulating each other. Yes. Prince Harry is always at them. Mm. And Tom Cruise. And they show films of themselves in helicopters.
Yep.
They shake hands and they salute each other and they swap uniforms, no doubt. I must say, every time I see them, you know, in their uniforms, it's the saluting. Stop saluting. It's like they...
Who salutes what? They are saluting people or people salute them?
John Travolta is always saluting.
Is he?
Yes. He wants to be standing on the steps of his plane wearing a hat, saluting. What can I say? I feel like I've seen it a lot recently.
Yes.
You flick through magazines and
is
there
a specialist channel that you can tune into? Daniel Day-Lewis, very successful actor, but he became an apprentice shoemaker for 3 years in Italy, studied making the shoes, only for his left foot, but nevertheless... I didn't think anybody would laugh at that, but well done. I can't put actors who fly into Room 101 because, I mean, they're only staving off boredom. And if you were a multi-millionaire Hollywood actor, you'd understand their pain. So you've had some success. Virtually everything else has gone in so far, but I'm sorry, Victoria, I can't put actors who fly into Room 101.
Fair enough.
Okay, Victoria, this sound illustrates your next choice. Well, we don't really need to be told, but tell us anyway. What is it that you want to put into Room 101?
I don't like cows.
You don't like cows? Oh. There's a few cow lovers out there.
Now hear me out.
Yes.
I find cows terrifying.
Do you?
Yes. They quite often trample people to death, mm-hmm. but... look so innocent doing it. It's like their whole life is about pretending to be placid, yeah, to lure old ladies over the stile. It's always old ladies walking their dogs in
a field. Baby-faced assassins.
But baby-faced assassins. They seem gentle. Mm. It's not like a lion. OK, that's not pretending it's your friend. But cows, it's just about scale. They don't claw, they don't bite and scratch, they just sort of get on you and immediately you've died.
Your fear of cows is a special phrase, a special word for it, bovinophobia, apparently. And it says, bovinophobia, apparently the recommended cure, not that you're looking for one, is desensitising and counter-conditioning. So it suggested that, quote, you spend 40 minutes to an hour with a cow on a regular basis. You're justified in your fear, because I didn't know this until we started researching this. The cow is the UK's deadliest animal.
You see, I tell this my husband this all
true.
The time.
According to the UK government's health and safety executive, cows attack between 3,000 and 4,000 people every year. And I'm glad you're finding this amusing. Between 2018 and 2023, almost 40 people were killed by cows.
You see, I'm always saying this, and the talk is always about these dangerous dogs.
Yes.
But you know, don't you? You can see, whereas a cow, oh, that looks nice, you think.
Yeah.
I'll just stroll across this field.
Yes.
And then they all come stampeding towards you and stand on you. And I they seem to be everywhere. You know, and I...
Islington?
No, but in the country...
Well, that's where they live, isn't it, essentially, in the country.
But it really spoils the concept of a nice country walk.
Does it?
Because they could be lurking at any time, round a corner, you know, and you're just walking along and you think it's fine, and suddenly there they are. And people are always giving you advice about, you know, the most important thing, stand completely still as the herd of cows comes thundering towards you. just stand there? Well, that's no good, is it?
Well, there's some advice here which has been issued by Basingstoke and Dean Council that says, first of all, always carry a bolt gun. No, sorry, that's not it. Here are the things they suggest. Raise your voice, but do not shout. I'm not sure how you judge that in fine detail. Then raise your arms to make yourself look bigger, but do not wave them about. Make eye contact with the cow to keep them at a distance. Walk briskly away from the cow, keeping an eye on it and your footing. And if that doesn't work, punch one of its five stomachs. I mean, the thing is... none of that is guaranteed to work. In fact, there's a website that says none of that works. The best piece of advice is do not go into a field that has cows in it. Essentially, just don't do it.
It's very good advice. The problem is, how do you know which fields have them in?
Well, vision helps.
Farmers are forever tricking people into going to fields that have cows in them because they think it's funny. They have a hard life, farmers. Particularly now. I mean, it's a tough life. There's few laughs.
Yeah.
But a tourist from London walking across a field and get sitting down for a picnic and then 28 furious cows thunder over the brow of a hill is one of the few things that make it worth doing.
Well, I do agree with you about this because I think there's an important message to be said about cows. I think if you do find yourself in a field, remember this episode. They are, I mean, basically, they are killers and polluters.
Yes.
With a sweet face. I am going to put cows into room 101. In they go. We've talked a lot about the things you did want to get rid of. So what's the one thing you couldn't do without?
Human kindness.
Human kindness?
No, not really. No, no.
Oh, you can do without human kindness.
Oh, yeah, never mind that. No, I thought I'd say gambling.
Gambling?
Gambling, yes.
What is it about gambling? I mean, you famously won a lot of money playing poker.
Yes, I have. No, it's always important when you talk about gambling to say, you know, it ruins lives. Hasn't ruined mine. I've done all right. I mean, I don't advocate gambling.
You're talking about yourself rather than a...
Yes, exactly. And in fact, I was a professional poker player for a long time, whatever that means, unemployed person who played a lot of poker. But I had a sponsorship contract with a big firm, you know, an online poker firm, and I wore their logo on my shirt and so on. They then launched an online casino, and I quit because I think, for me, there's a very important distinction between poker, which I would say, you know, don't be an idiot, don't play for money you can't afford, but it's a skill game, it's a technical game, but I absolutely would advise people with every fibre of my being, do not play roulette, play dice, play fruit machines. It's massive odds stacked against you. Don't do it, don't do it. But for me, it's vital. I'm not interested in physical danger. Going on a country ramble, for example. That sort of thrill-seeking is not for me. But there's always a wild bit. I imagine people that are into sailing would say the same. There's a wild element to the sea that they can't control, and there's a thrill that's part of it. And it's like that for me. There's a bit, I am quite good at poker. I have won money doing it. But at any moment, a random card might come out of the deck and totally destroy the whole scene that you've set up. And I find that oddly thrilling. But I really miss it.
Well, thank you for sharing that with us. And, you know, and thank you for being my guest today. Ladies and gentlemen, Victoria Cohen Mitchell.
Room 101 was written and presented by Paul Merton, with additional material by John Owen and Suki Webster. It was produced by Richard Wilson. It's a Hatchet production for BBC Radio 4.
And joining Paul Merton next week to discuss their choices for Room 101 will be Giles Brandreth. After the news here on Radio 4, it's The Archers, where Denise hatches a plan.
I'm Helena Bonham Carter, and from BBC Radio 4, this is a brand new series of history's secret heroes.
Raymond had only one thing on his mind, to fight the Nazis.
10 remarkable stories from World War II of individuals not to be underestimated. We'll hear of daring risk-takers.
What she was offering to do was to ski in over the high Carpathian Mountains in minus 40 degrees.
United by a spirit of defiance.
They knew these dangers, but still they carried on.
The new series of History's Secret Heroes. Listen on BBC Sounds.
BBC